Books on Tape presents The Pirate King by R. A. Salvatore, read by Mark Bramhall. Prelude. Suljak, one of the five high captains ruling Luskan, and a former commander of one of the most successful pirate crews ever to terrorize the Sword Coast, was not easily intimidated. An extrovert who typically bellowed before he considered his roar, his voice often rang loudest among the ruling council. Even the arcane Brotherhood, who many knew to be the true power in the city, were hard-pressed to cow him. He ruled Ship Suljak and commanded a solid collection of merchants and thugs from Suljak Lodge in the south-central section of Luskan. It was not a showy or grand place, certainly nothing to match the strength of High Captain Teurl's four-spired castle or High Captain Kurth's mighty tower, but it was well defended and situated comfortably near the residence of Rethnor, Suljak's closest ally among the captains. Still, Suljak found himself on unsteady ground as he walked into the room in Ten Oaks, the palace of Ship Rethnor. The old man Rethnor wasn't there and wasn't supposed to be. He spoke through what seemed to be the least intimidating man in the room, the youngest of his three sons. But Suljak knew that appearances could be deceiving. Kensadon, a small man, well-dressed in dull gray and black tones, and well-groomed with his hair cut short in all the appropriate angles and clips, sat with a leg crossed over one knee in a comfortable chair in the center back of the plain room. He was sometimes called the Crow, as he always wore a high-collared black cape and high black shoes that tied tightly halfway up his calf. He walked with an awkward gait, stiff-legged like a bird. Put that together with his long, hooked nose, and any who saw him would immediately understand the nickname, even a year ago before he'd first donned the high-collared cape. Any minor wizard could easily discern that there was magic in that garment, powerful magic, and such items were often reputed to effect changes on their bearer. As with the renowned girdle of dwarvenkind, which gradually imparted the characteristics of a dwarf to its wearer, so too Kensadon's cloak seemed to be acting upon him. His gait grew a bit more awkward, and his nose a bit longer and more hooked. His muscles were not taut, and his hands were not calloused. Unlike many of Rethnor's men, Kensadon didn't decorate his dark brown hair. He carried nothing flashy at all on his person. Furthermore, the cushions of the seat made him appear even smaller, but somehow, inexplicably, all of it seemed to work for him. Kensadon was the center of the room, with everyone leaning in to hear his every soft-spoken word. And whenever he happened to twitch or shift in his seat, those nearest him inevitably jumped and glanced nervously around. Except, of course, for the dwarf who stood behind and to the right of Kensadon's chair. The dwarf's burly arms were crossed over his barrel chest, their flowing lines of corded muscles broken by the black, beaded braids of his thick beard. His weapons stabbed up diagonally behind him, spiked heads dangling at the end of glass-steel chains. No one wanted a piece of that one, not even Suljak. Kensadon's friend, recently imported muscle from the east, had waged a series of fights along the docks that had left any and all opposing him dead or wishing they were.
"How fares your father?" Suljak asked Kensadon, though he hadn't yet pried his eyes from the dangerous dwarf. He took his seat before and to the side of Kensadon.
"Rethnor is well," Kensadon answered.
"For an old man,"
Suljak dared remark, and Kensadon merely nodded.
"There is a rumor that he wishes to retire, or that he already has," Suljak went on.
Kensadon put his elbows on the arms of his chair, finger-locked his hands together, and rested his chin upon them in a pensive pose.
"Will he announce you as his replacement?" Suljak pressed.
The younger man, barely past his mid-twenties, chuckled a bit at that, and Suljak cleared his throat. "Would that eventuality displease you?" asked the crow.
"You know me better than that," Suljak protested.
"And what of the other three?" Suljak paused to consider that for a moment, then shrugged.
"It's not unexpected. Welcomed?
Perhaps, but with a wary eye turned your way. The High Captains live well and don't wish to upset the balance."
"Their ambition falls victim to success, you mean?"
Again, Suljak shrugged and said lightheartedly,
"Isn't enough ever enough?"
"No," Kensington answered simply, with blunt and brutal honesty, and once again Suljak found himself on shifting sands. Suljak glanced around at the many attendants, then dismissed his own. Kensington did likewise, except for his dwarf bodyguard. Suljak looked past the seated man sourly.
"Speak freely," Kensington said.
Suljak nodded toward the dwarf.
"He's deaf," Kensington explained.
"Can't hear a thing,"
the dwarf confirmed.
Suljak shook his head.
What he meant to say needed saying, he told himself, and so he started.
"You are serious about going after the Brotherhood?"
Kensington sat expressionless, emotionless.
"There are more than 100 wizards who call the Host Tower home," Suljak announced.
No response, not a whit.
"Many of them archmages."
"You presume that they speak and act with a singular mind," said Kensington finally.
"Arklim Greeth holds them fast."
"No one holds a wizard fast," Kensington replied. "Theirs is the most selfish and self-serving of professions."
"Some say that Greeth has cheated death itself."
"Death is a patient opponent." Suljak blew out a frustrated sigh.
"He consorts with devils," he blurted. "Greeth is not to be taken lightly."
"I take no one lightly," Kensington assured him, a clear edge to his words. Suljak sighed again and managed to calm himself.
"I'm wary of them, is all," he explained more quietly. "Even the people of Luskan know it now, that we five High Captains, your father among us, are puppets to the Master Arklim Greeth. I've been so long under his thumb I've forgotten the feel of wind breaking over the prow of my own ship. Might be that it's time to take back the wheel."
"Past time. And all we need is for Arklim Greeth to continue to feel secure in his superiority. He weaves too many threads, and only a few need unravel to unwind his tapestry of power." Suljak shook his head, clearly less than confident.
"Thrice lucky is secured?" Kensington asked. "Maemon sailed this morning, yes. Is he to meet with Lord Brambleberry of Waterdeep?"
"He knows what he is to do," Kensington replied. Suljak scowled, understanding that to mean that Suljak need not know. Secrecy was power, he understood, though he was far too emotional a thug to ever keep a secret for long. It hit Suljak then, and he looked at Kensington with even more respect, if that was possible. Secrecy was the weight of the man, the pull that had everyone constantly leaning toward him. Kensington had many pieces in play, and no one saw more than a few of them. That was Kensington's strength. Everyone around him stood on shifting sand while he was rooted in bedrock.
"So it's Dudemont, you say?"
Suljak asked, determined to at least begin weaving the young man's threads into some sensible pattern. He shook his head at the irony of that possibility.
"Sea Sprite's captain is a true hero of the people," Kensington replied. "Perhaps the only hero for the people of Luskan, who have no one to speak for them in the halls of power."
Suljak smirked at the insult, reminding himself that if it were a barb aimed at him, then logic aimed it at Kensington's own father as well.
"Dudemont is unbending in principle, and therein lies our opportunity,"
Kensadin explained.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?